The number of data breaches worldwide rises every year, going up by 211% from 2023 to 2024, due mainly to five mega breaches. Scams, identity theft, they all start with your personal data being exposed across various websites. It's on people search sites, in data broker databases, shady directories, AI answers, and even search results. That's the part most people don't see. Their home address, phone number, email accounts, and social security number aren't just leaked. They're being actively bought and sold by bad actors. But you can protect yourself now with Incogni. Incogni tracks down and removes your personal data from multiple sites, including online directories, people search sites, and even commercial databases. The Incogni process is fully automated for hundreds of known data brokers, companies that collect and sell your data without your consent. The categories of data brokers Incogni covers include marketing, recruitment, health information, risk mitigation, financial information, and people search sites. With Incogni, you can protect your privacy in three easy steps. Remember, they can't harm you if they can't find you. So, take back your personal data with Incogni. Use code INVESTTALK to get 60% off annual plans. Go to incogni.com/investtalk. You can also find the link in the episode description.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is InvestTalk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to this Friday, November 21st, 2025 edition of InvestTalk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and I'll be here with you over the next 45, 50 minutes as we count down the seconds until the weekend where we all get to sit back and relax. Certainly, hopefully, you've been paying attention this week and you understand that, well, it's been a pretty volatile week. Now, looking ahead, right around the corner, Thanksgiving will more than likely show a trim down in volume and probably more muted price action that at least we can impart some wisdom from. But in spite of that, our learning does not end. Our job each and every day is to come to this show with the goal of helping to make you a better and more informed investor. Now, in order to accomplish that, we have a mixture of educational items, actionable material, but the most important part of this show, I always say, your finance and investment questions. And because that is the case, we will go to our first live call. Jarek from Halifax, all the way up in Canada. You got a question about CCJ?
Hi, Luke. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about Cameco. Just looks like it's slowly coming back down to earth here. And wondering what you think is fair value for this stock here, and also what your thoughts are on this general supply demand dynamic for nuclear, and kind of what inning are we in for the miners for those?
That's a great question. So CCJ is Cameco Corporation. It is a uranium and nuclear power play. So they're a fuel services company that operates globally. So they do the exploration, the mining, the milling, and the sale. They have their fuel services. And they also have a stake in Westinghouse Electrical Company, making up their Westinghouse segment. Now, about 80% of their revenue comes from their Canadian geographical segment, about 20% from the United States. And in a breakdown, about 48% of the revenue comes from that Westinghouse segment, 44% from uranium, about 8% from fuel services. Now, you mentioned they're coming back down to earth, and that's because they completely blasted off over the past really couple years, right? 2024, bit muted, only up 19.2%, and I say only. But in 2023, look at that, 90.1% positive performance, 54.58% year-to-date is what we're seeing thus far this year. Over the past 3 months alone, up 11.21, up 30.38 over the past 52 weeks. The reason why? Well, revenue has grown. pretty consistently at a clip of 10.3% on an annualized basis. You know, it's not even really slowing down into this year. You see revenue set to grow from $2.2 billion up to $2.4 the next year. At the same time, net income nearly quadrupling, up from $125 million in 2024, projected to be $485 million this year. At the same time, margins are expanding as well. And so because of this rapid growth, a little bit understandable that you may have wanted to back off a little bit, right? It's trading at 56.5 times price to forward-looking earnings. It's trading at 7.3 times price to book value. Now, we have, in one of our strategies, held this name for a very, very long time, a matter of years, right? And the reason why we continue to hold it is because of this power demand that, in spite of, you know, what happens with the monetization of AI and all these hyperscalers, the power demand is there. You're seeing companies like Microsoft make deals with Constellation. You're seeing Three Mile Island open back up. The demand is there. Now, with this historic run-up, with a little bit of an unwind of the AI trade, understandably, you're seeing this come down a bit. You know, there's kind of multiple factors that are going in here. From a fundamental perspective, the growth is phenomenal. And I think that it has been a really good way, and it's really borne out that it's a good way to play the quote-unquote AI revolution. And from a momentum perspective, it's still incredibly strong, which is why we continue to hold this name and are going to continue to hold it into the future. That is Cameco Corporation, ticker CCJ. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Luke.
Now we're about to head into our first break of the day, but we have a lot to get to. And when we come back, we'll talk about all those stories we have for you and answer more of your questions here on InvestTalk.
The prosperous future you envision for yourself and your family will not happen without strategic planning and definitive action.
Let's go to Brian in San Mateo looking at Roku.
And I wanted your take on the technical picture.
For the unprepared investor, market volatility around the world demonstrates risk, but opportunities wait for no one. And now may be the best time in years to invest wisely, to invest strategically.
What I would do is keep saving and look for other opportunities.
But how can you decide what sectors to avoid, which stocks to buy, and what might be the best price point?
I'm new to investing, and my friend Wesley recommended your podcast a year ago.
The next decisive step on your path to financial freedom begins with a Spotify search for InvestTalk. Listen live or download the free podcast.
InvestTalk Innovators. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero interview company leaders, founders, and visionaries. So head over to the InvestTalk YouTube channel and look for InvestTalk Innovators. Luke Guerrero is here now and ready to answer your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. So here's a little bit of what we have planned for you all today. My main focus point concerns this topic, dollar cost averaging versus lump sum investing. What is the smarter move? We will tackle the classic investing dilemma of putting your money in slowly versus investing it all at once, and explain when each strategy can make the most sense for real-life investors. Also, we'll touch on an age-old question about how one should fund their retirement. Should they draw down their Social Security, or should they draw down their portfolio? Because obviously, right, the differences can be a little bit of an opportunity cost there. So we'll touch on that topic. Also touch a little bit on private equity and how any time typically exclusive investing goes mainstream tends to worry long-time investors who are thinking, okay, well, has all the good dried up? And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on Trump's tariffs. Now, the CBO says that they are likely to not reduce the deficit by as much as previously thought. We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on crypto. And another on CMG, that is Chipotle Mexican Grill. as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel, and hopefully some more live calls throughout the show. Before we go any further, though, let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks finishing higher, bit of a respite from the past couple days. The Dow up 1.08%, S&P 500 up 98 basis points, NASDAQ up 88, Russell 2000 up 2.8%. You know, in spite of this gain, though, major indices were down for the week. Most shorted, tariff-exposed small caps value names did pretty well today. Airlines, home builders, housing-related retail also doing well on the day. Big tech, mostly higher. Google, the big standout from that group. And frankly, not a lot of groups were in the red. Semicap, cybersecurity, nuclear, quantum computing, some of the relative underperformers on the day. On the bond side, Treasuries a bit firmer. You saw some curve steepening, yields down anywhere from 1 to 4 basis points. The dollar index was little changed. Gold finished up 50 basis points, and Bitcoin futures down another 2.3%, now off more than 10% for the week, while crude oil settled down 1.6% to end the week amidst the latest headlines around Russia and the Ukraine. Now, all in all, markets seem to really stabilize a bit today after multiple, frankly, unsuccessful attempts earlier in the week. And that came after, if you remember, right, NVIDIA, Walmart, pretty positive earnings for those companies and maybe those sectors and those themes. But in spite of that, it didn't really heal the fragile market sentiment. So today, there was a lot of focus on repricing of the Fed rate cut odds after some dovish comments from New York Fed's Williams. Investors now seeing a 70% plus chance of the December cut, up from 20% earlier this week. You can also point to, you know, big swings like Thursday 3.5% intraday pullback as historically being a near-term bullish signal. And there's other bullish sentiment as well, right? Positive AI sentiment, resilient consumer spending, corporate buybacks. And generally, you do tend to see positive seasonality into year end. But it's not all good, right? There's still some scrutiny around that AI theme. There's still some potentially stretched systematic longs, some forced selling, some dampened retail investor impulses. So really a lot of competing factors going on to sum up this week. On the data front, flash November S&P Global PMI release noted that growth accelerated in business activity, a bit of improved confidence in the year ahead. Services PMI printed above consensus while manufacturing undershot by just a little bit. Final November University of Michigan consumer sentiment also reported today, printed at 51 in line with the consensus, but still its weakest final since mid-2022. Inflation expectations dropped at both the 1 and 5 year horizons, however. Looking ahead next week, market moving into a relatively slow period ahead of the Thanksgiving Day holiday on Thursday. Delayed releases coming for September retail sales, which we'll see on Tuesday. Durable good orders on Wednesday. Consumer confidence also on the calendar for Tuesday, as well as, you know, something that we always pay attention to, which is Black Friday sales trends. Also announced by the Bureau of Labor Statistics today, the October CPI report has been canceled. Alrighty, let's keep things moving and get a fresh listener question now.
Hey, this is Joseph calling from Elizabethtown, Kentucky. Just wanted to get your all's opinion on a very well-known stock. It's gone down considerably, and maybe right now might be a good time to buy some shares. Is the Chipotle, C as in Charlie, M as in mother, G as in girl for Chipotle. Obviously, it's well-known, but it's taken a hit over the last, sure how long ago. I had it always in the back of my mind on the earnings, but I think it's probably taken a hit.
All right, well, that is CMG Chipotle Mexican Grill. It is a fast casual restaurant, really one of the most prolific fast casual restaurant chains. So they specialize in making burritos, burrito bowls. They make quesadillas, though I bought one the other day. It's a child's quesadilla. It's like this big for those of you who are watching at home. It's really small. Anyway, That's the type of food they have. And it kind of differed. I think it might have originally spun out of the same of the McDonald's Corporation. I could be making that up. But either way, it's had a bit of a rough time. Year to date, down 47-55 over the past 3 months, down 26-29, down 47-27 over the past 52 weeks. One of the reasons being is, well, I mean, the company cut its 2025 annual sales forecast. Anytime you see forecasts being cut, that's certainly not a good thing. Weaker consumer spending, inflationary pressure, things are just getting pretty darn expensive there as well. And so what they've been trying to do is target growth in other markets while same-store sales is really not growing much, right? You're seeing revenue projected to grow from $11.3 billion to $11.9. That is far below the 15.2% that it has been growing over the past 5-6 years. But net margins are still solid, right? Net income is still solid. $1.553 billion is where it's projected to be this year. And we're seeing a bit more of a resilient consumer, especially in the middle and upper income spectrum, meaning that maybe heading into 2026, you could start to see same-store sales pick up a bit. You know, inflation hopefully moderate, margin pressures hopefully come back. And so this has pushed it into an area where it's trading at 25.2 times price to forward-looking earnings. It's the low over the past 5 years. Its price to book value is near the low. Its valuations are all near the low here. You know, relative strength, I mean, this company was outperforming for so long, right? It had to come back to some sort of fundamental reality. For us, we started picking it up at these levels. We think that, you know, Chipotle is the type of company that, given, subsiding macro headwinds, given the brand, given the ubiquity of it, we think that as a long-term perspective, Chipotle is a solid company. That's CMG Chipotle Mexican Grill. Moving into a break, still to come, my focus point, more answers to your questions. So give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Get ready for an all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar. Year-end tax toolkit, RMD planning, tax loss harvesting, and deferral strategies. It's all happening online and free of charge. The new Wealth Webinar, Tuesday, December 9th from 11 a.m. to 12 noon Pacific Time. Pre-register now at investtalk.com.
When investors talk about trying to build long-term wealth, the conversation usually circles back to two classic approaches: dollar cost averaging and lump sum investing. Now, these methods appear pretty simple on the surface, but each carries deeper behavioral implications, and it can help shape an investor's long-term success. So let's start with the definition here. Dollar cost averaging, which we're going to refer to as DCA, means that you're committing a fixed amount on a regular schedule, no matter what the market is doing. It is, in effect, the backbone of most retirement plans, right? Where your automatic payroll deductions, they invest steadily month after month after month. Think about your 401k, right? You're not timing anything. This cash is just going into the account every time you're getting paid. Now, the beauty of this lies in its consistency. It turns investing into more of a habit rather than a reaction to headlines, or more importantly, emotions. The SEC notes that this approach, it naturally buys more when prices fall and fewer than they when they rise, smoothing volatility over time. Now, Vanguard's James Martielli captures the appeal well, right? DCA, he says, reduces the emotional sting, of poor timing. It helps investors avoid regret driving decisions. But DCA is not a magic shield. It will not prevent losses in a declining market. And that's kind of where the debate begins, because critics argue from a pure performance standpoint, now I'm just talking performance, lump sum investing, which is putting all your money in the market immediately, today, right now, often wins. There was a long-term study that Vanguard did. It showed that lump sum outperformed DCA 64% of the time over 6 months. Stretch the comparison to 3 years, 92% of the time. And the logic is straightforward. Markets go up more often than they go down. So getting invested earlier, you're going to capture more of that upward drift. Now, statistics don't tell the full story, right? Especially in years where markets fall hard. Think 2008. Lump sum investors who entered at the start of 2008 saw a $100,000 portfolio drop to around $61,500, a nearly 40% hit. Now, a DCA investor, if you spread your contributions throughout the year, they saw a far smaller decline, closer to 26%, a meaningful difference in, well, dollars, but more importantly, what is this all about? Stress. Now, this shows DCA's greatest strength. It softens the blow. During severe downturns, investor confidence tends to be a bit more fragile. This can help. Now, over two decades, lump sum investing still holds a slight advantage, but the gap is surprisingly narrow. Schwab took a look at this. They found that after 20 years, lump sum finished with about $135,000, while DCA landed at $134,800. So it's effectively neck and neck. Expanding the view across 76 different rolling 20-year periods since 1928, lump sum investing won 66 times, but in every case, both strategies generated meaningful long-term growth. And so that kind of brings us to DCA's hidden edge outside of investing. It's psychological power. It helps to keep people invested through uncertainty. Real-world investors aren't spreadsheets. They react emotionally, especially when markets swing wildly. Think about the dot-com era. Lump sum investors near the peak endured a slow, painful recovery, while DCA investors, they phased in at lower prices and absorbed far less emotional trauma. DCA doesn't eliminate volatility. It does not. But it does help to reframe downturns as buying opportunities rather than threats. And that mindset shift helps investors stay disciplined. And discipline is often the deciding factor between a long-term success and costly mistakes. DCA also plays a role in bond investing, an area many consider stable, but that can experience sharp declines. Look at the total bond index's 13% drop in 2022, something that you don't typically see within that asset class. Investors who kept averaging into that dip picked up higher yields at lower prices, and that improved their long-term bond positioning. Still, lump sum investing has its place, especially for younger investors with decades ahead of them, or for those investing after a dramatic market decline. It can also be a better fit during strong bull markets when delaying entry risks missing out on those rapid gains. But for most investors, especially those weary of volatility, DCA offers something harder to quantify. Let's call it emotional comfort, and more importantly, a steady path forward, because it builds routine. It reinforces consistency. It supports long-term participation. The real driver behind compounding is not what you're picking, but being consistently invested. Ultimately, retirement success isn't about squeezing that final percentage point of return. It's about staying invested long enough to let time and discipline work hand in hand. For that reason, DCA, in spite of the research saying, in dollar values, you may be a little bit behind, DCA remains more than a strategy. It's a mindset that helps deliver patience, participation, and success. On the next Invest Talk, we have this topic for you: gold or Bitcoin, the new safe haven showdown. We will examine the case for gold and Bitcoin as alternative assets, how each fits or doesn't into a diversified portfolio, and what type of investor each one is really built for. That's Monday, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and we are ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
The weekend is here, or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions, so step up and call in.
This year, give a gift that goes far beyond the moment, an Invest 529 account. Whether it's a child, grandchild, or someone just starting out, you're helping them save for education that could open doors for a lifetime. Invest 529 is a tax-advantaged way to save for college, trade school, or even apprenticeship programs. It's flexible, easy to start, and you can contribute any amount, big or small. You can even invite your friends and family to join in, making it a meaningful group gift. Each contribution helps build a brighter future, one deposit at a time. And because the money can grow tax-free, it's a gift that really builds value over time. So instead of giving something that gets used up or set aside, give the gift that can change a life. Start an Invest529 account today. Go to invest529.com to get started.
Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Invest Talk. I'm calling to ask a question on SPLG. It's a ETF, and I have it for my child. I have an UTMA account for my child, so I was wondering if that's a good ETF to hold to the long term for a child's UTMA account. Thank you.
SPOG is a leveraged ETF. Specifically, it's the 2X long leveraged Spotify daily ETF. So it's trying to deliver you 2 times the daily performance of Spotify technologies before fees and expenses. Now, it's a highly leveraged product, right? It's tied directly to Spotify's, key here, daily performance, meaning that anything that impacts Spotify on a daily basis, earnings, user growth, competition, et cetera, is going to amplify in this name. Now, the nature of these daily rebalancing, you know, in leverage ETF means that every multi-day period, the performance can deviate, and it can deviate dramatically, especially in volatile markets. It means it can work really to the detriment of building wealth and to the detriment of investors. It is a high risk, it is a high volatility instrument, and frankly, you know, it is not really suitable, and we say this all the time, it's not designed for long-term holds. That's not what it's for. These are for imparting daily trading convictions. Holding it for longer periods requires a lot of monitoring and understanding that there's compounding and decay effects. So, you know, if you're trying to get exposure to Spotify or really any individual company, you don't want to get too cute with it. There's a lot of dangers from holding these types of vehicles because the return profile can be fundamentally different from what you are expecting. Thanks for the call. Let's make it 2 in a row. Another question that came in earlier from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Justin and Luke. Just a quick question on crypto. With the recent drop, is there a point where you would add a position to your portfolio? I have no crypto exposure, so something small in the, you know, 3 to potentially 5% range. Is there a point where you would start adding that? And then would you go with something like the iShares Bitcoin ETF, iBit, or would you lean more towards Ethereum with iShares ETHA? We just love your input and recommendations. I look forward to listening on the podcast. Thanks.
I could go on for an entire show about cryptocurrency, Bitcoin specifically, what has been happening with it, volumes over the past 5 years. And we actually had this discussion in the office with one of my colleagues. And, you know, I was saying that holding Bitcoin at a small weight, your 3 to 5% weight of your total portfolio, is a good, or not necessarily good, but a reasonable risk return decision. But you have to understand that crypto, just like anything else, but more so crypto, is driven by flows, right? You saw what happened when, okay, we have it on DeFi, meaning that people are holding it in decentralized wallets, right? And so you had the highest conviction buyers. As time went on, you got that exposure to more lower conviction buyers that weren't the original Bitcoin maxis, but still pushing prices higher. And then ETFs come in. Now you have a lot more retail money pushing prices higher. Then institutions started buying a bit, pushing prices higher. And the whole point of what the whole crypto lobby was trying to do was to get governments buying it because that is such a big pile of money. And so it's predicated upon more and more money coming into this system. Now, Bitcoin, crypto has never gone through some sort of financial shock like we saw in 2008, right? And even post-pandemic, you still haven't seen volumes recover, which is my way of saying it's difficult to say what is a good price for Bitcoin. I don't know. It is a purely speculative asset. There's no cash flows that are coming. There's no return to investors. The price is purely what somebody's willing to pay for it, and nothing else is coming your way. So I struggle to say now's a good time, here's a good time, because it could head meaningfully lower. It could head meaningfully higher in a way that it is kind of difficult to see the fundamentals because it's the ultimate long duration asset. There are no fundamentals here, which is why I say having a 3 to 5% allocation is reasonable given the risk reward trade-off, but trying to understand what price action is going to be in any given time period, very foolhardy endeavor. Thanks for the call. Now it is Friday, and on Friday we like to run down a few key benchmark numbers for you. So let me hit you with a quick rundown right now. The two-year treasury yield was at 3.507% today. For perspective, last week that number was 3.616, and 203 weeks ago that number was 64 basis points. How about the 10-year? 4.065 today, a bit lower from last week's 4.15. Meaningfully higher from about 201 weeks ago, and that number was 1.762. Gold, $40.63 per ounce, $10 less compared with last week. 16 weeks ago, though, that number was $33.48, and 195 weeks ago, that number was $18.06. Silver, $49.99, couldn't quite break over 50, but that's still 92 cents less compared with last week. 93 weeks ago, that number was $22.80. And looking back 187 weeks, that number was $23.94. Oil, $57.97 per barrel today, $1.98 less than last week. And a lot less than 61 weeks ago, where that number was $67.79. And 103 weeks back, when that number was $74.30. And even 202 weeks ago, where that number was $66.62. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.09 per gallon, 1 cent higher than last week. Still lower, though, than 129 weeks ago when it was $3.56, and 177 weeks back when it was $4.25, and even 197 weeks back when it was $3.57. In California, gas was averaging $4.62 per gallon today. That's 5 cents less than last week, and less than 107 weeks ago when it was $5.32. And 138 weeks back, or rather 183 weeks back, where that number is 587. For comparison, in North Dakota, gas is $2.81 per gallon. That is $1.81 less than gas in California. Now, a generation ago, politicians floated an interesting idea, right? Putting stocks into social security. But today's trend, it's flipped a little bit. Influencers are now pushing people to put their social security into stocks. On TikTok and YouTube, a growing chorus urges Americans to claim benefits as early as age 62 and immediately invest that income into the market. Okay, well, that pitch runs directly against long-standing financial wisdom, which emphasizes delaying benefits to age 70 to lock in that higher income and that inflation-adjusted lifelong income as well, right? So while the conventional wisdom can be wrong, in anything, completely possible. In this case, it's pretty much unanimous. Taking Social Security early just to chase stock returns, usually a losing strategy. Finfluencers, as they like to call themselves, often frame it as a can't-miss opportunity, especially for healthy, well-educated, higher-income workers in their early 60s who have long life expectancies. They argue that based on the historical 7% real return of stocks, early claimants can invest monthly benefits and beat the system over time. Now, what those videos are skipping over, as these things tend to do, is pretty crucial, right? Social Security provides guarantees, inflation-protected income with zero market risk, something the stock market ain't never going to replicate. So let's do a little math. Delaying to age 70 boosts monthly checks by roughly 77%. A powerful form of longevity insurance that compounds over an entire retirement. Even if stocks perform well, early claimants only slightly outperform late claimants in total dollars. But if stocks slump, even modestly, the early strategy investors end up far, far worse off. Now, this idea has gained traction because people have lived through a decade plus bull market and growing fears about the long-term stability of Social Security itself, they're ever present, right? But if Social Security ever truly collapsed, the entire U.S. economy would probably be in crisis, and stocks wouldn't be a safe haven either. It would undermine the very logic of the Finfluencers' pitch. For those who don't need the money immediately, The smarter move is to spend down bonds or fixed income assets and delay claiming, securing more guaranteed income rather than borrowing from your own future. And as always, take anything you see on YouTube, anything you see on especially TikTok, anything you hear podcasts, take it all with a grain of salt. Alrighty, let's roll in another caller question now.
Yeah, it's Mark from San Diego. Interested in this company called UMAC, UMAC, tiny little company, does drones. And I guess the Trump administration, Don Jr., got involved with this company. So there's great hopes. Looking at the minimum financial statistics, there's really no earnings to speak of, PE and price to book and all, price to sales, pretty darn high. So just was curious what your opinion would be, and if you have some massive government contract, would that make a difference in a company like this? Thanks, and I'll listen to you on the air. Bye-bye.
UMAC is Unusual Machines. They are a U.S.-based manufacturer of drone components and systems targeting defense markets. Now, they have domestic manufacturing, which is certainly a plus for them given the tariff dynamics. And I think they recently did get a, or at least they might have gotten, or they're in the running for a big government contract. And that's why you're seeing this big, really crazy move here, up from about 161 per share up to 1873. Now, in spite of that, they're not making money. You know, they have a decent amount of debt, $262 million in debt on a $293 million market cap company. Frankly, you know, anytime you get a situation where a government contract is awarded to a company where the president's son is involved, once the other party takes control of something, chances are there's going to be a lot of investigations. Are they going to try to back out of this contract here? I don't know. This seems to me like a type of situation where a reasonable valuation would probably be closer to $2 and not up near $7.88. So, you know, this just carries these exogenous risks that you don't see in a lot of areas. And I like the drone space. I like the drone space. But just given the dynamics of this specific company, it may move in a way that is completely devoid from fundamentals, meaning that you're going to be a lot more speculative, right? A lot more gambly than investy, if you will. Thanks for the call. Now, I want to briefly mention the newest KPP premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow. In the KPP Insights section, we touched on recent market volatility. We've been talking about it a lot, right? In the first half of the year, we had calm markets, steady upward, quote-unquote Liberation Day comes. Things just start hitting the fan. But then there's a calm. There's a lull in the air. But over the past month, that has not been the case. You're starting to see some scrutiny. Over AI, you're starting to see some scrutiny over themes that have been driving markets. And so we're going to dive into all of that. Something we've, again, been talking about for a while. What does it mean? What is the likely path ahead? What does it mean for 2026? In the stock ideas section, we mentioned a London-based global asset management group and a real estate investment trust that invests in self-storage space. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on the difference between owning a pile of stocks versus owning a portfolio. If any of that sounds interesting, if all of that sounds interesting, head over to investtalk.com and subscribe. The newsletter will come to your inbox on Saturday afternoon. Looks like we have plenty of time, so let's fit in another fresh listener question now.
Hey, Luke and Justin, Bill from Philadelphia here. Calling about Adient PLC, ticker symbol ADNT, but basically a OEM manufacturer company that's international. I like the business. I see it's been depressed for a little bit now and would like to dip my toes in. I wanted to see it now at under around 18 today. It's a good time to grab some shares. And this can be more of a long-term hold, so I can wait for it to recover. And wanted to get your thoughts on it. Thank you so much. Love what you guys do. Thank you.
Adient PLC, it's a global company, and what they do is they develop and manufacture seating systems and components for passenger cars. Now, from a size perspective, it's about $1.4 billion market cap, so it's certainly a small name. Year-to-date, it's only up 9.87%, but in the past 3 months, it's really been suffering, down nearly 20% in the past 3 months, flat over the past 52 weeks, and really over the past 3 years, going back to 2023, it's It's been a poor performer compared to the overall market. One of the reasons why is, well, growth has slowed pretty substantially. In fact, revenue hit a peak in 2023 and has kind of been falling ever since. They're actually projected, or rather they didn't make money this year because their fiscal year ended in September, so net income was negative. But if you take out interest and taxes, EBIT was relatively stable over time, but got a lot of debt. That's why it shrunk a lot from EBIT to net income. $2.5 billion in debt on that $1.4 billion market cap company. And so it's really already been suffering from some cyclical issues. That's why revenue has fallen off. Margins are already paper thin. EBIT margin, 3.1%. And that's the high over the past 6 years. So, you know, given the dynamics of what's going on out there, I mean, it's still trading and it's the middle of its range. Given cyclical factors, given what I'm seeing in growth and its debt levels for the size of this company, I think for AD&T, gonna have to pass. Thanks for the call. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here: to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after our final break. So if you want to talk to me before this weekend, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Duncan from New York. Thank you for all that you do. I'm actually calling about stock ticker PLTR, Palantir Technologies. It looks like it's going on a huge downtrend. And after listening to your InvestTalk podcast, I feel like I'm also starting to get much clearer and better about setting up options, like put options. One, do you think this would be a good stock to put a put? I understand a little bit about it, as in like I'm thinking this is going to go down way lower. And I believe this because, one, the PE ratio is over 300. So that's one thing. If you could give me some other advice about putting a put as well, too, I greatly appreciate it. I'm just looking to kind of diversify my skill set when it comes to financials and looking forward to it. Have a great day. Bye.
Palantir is a data analytics company, right? Artificial intelligence software platform for commercial and government clients. Since 2023, its performance has been crazy, up 167% in 2023, up 340% in 2024, up 104% so far this year in 2025. It is trading at 162.3 times price to forward-looking earnings, which sounds high, but it at one point in the past 5 years was trading at 385.9 times price to forward-looking earnings, and the average is 109. Now, when you are dealing with options, this is an area where you can make a lot of money. But with a name like Palantir that moves devoid of fundamentals, that has a huge following, let's say, is a retail favorite, big risk of it moving against you. So I'd probably start figuring out, I don't know if you were writing put options or buying put options, but understand the dynamics of the options market with a name that is far less volatile and trading a bit more on fundamentals. I think that's a safer approach to start with. Just my advice. Thanks for the call. Now, private equity's old guard is a bit uneasy as a wave of new capital from wealthy individual investors starting to reshape the private equity, or rather the private market landscape. For decades, private equity was the domain of pensions and endowments and other institutional giants, but exclusivity is fading fast. Evergreen private funds built for retail investors have exploded, raising an estimated $450 billion, mostly in the last few years, providing a lifeline to firms struggling to raise institutional money. And that surge has sparked a bit of tension. Many institutions say they're being crowded out of deals as retail dollars flood in, and that dilutes their influence and their negotiating power. Pension leaders say this retail versus institutional conflict now dominates conversations, with some investors avoiding managers who lean too heavily on retail capital. If you look at a survey of institutional limited partners, Anxiety is clearly there. 83% of institutional investors, 83, are less likely to back managers taking in large retail flows. Behind that is a simple fear for them, right? Too much capital chasing the same deals are going to compress returns. That's just basic. You reach capacity with certain investing themes, and that could weaken private equity's risk premium. And fundraising trends underscore the shift. Traditional institutional fundraising, down, slowed sharply. Firms like Blackstone now pull in more than private equity wealth channels than their flagship buyout funds. With more than 250 evergreen funds launched since 2022 and assets projected to hit $1 trillion by 2030, retail money is becoming a defining force, and it's not just in private markets. You can see it in public markets as well. Institutions worry not only about diluted deal allocations, but also about losing access. And so as retail products proliferate, tracking fees and expenses becomes a bit more complex. It pushes institutions to scrutinize fund books closely to ensure rising costs of servicing retail investors isn't being shifted onto them. And as retail investors, you have to understand the dynamics of this market broadly. And the influence, although waning a bit, that institutions and pensions still have. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members, tell just one before this holiday season about our free podcast downloads, which you can get on Spotify or on iTunes. While you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. And quick reminder, our newest Invest Talk Wealth webinar, Tuesday, December 9th, happening online and free. Just remember, you got to go pre-register. As always, if today's show made you think about your financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirement, and you need a second set of eyes or a third set of eyes or a fourth set of eyes, who knows? Many eyes. Eyes are helpful. Head over to kppfinancial.com or investtalk.com, where you can sign up for a no-cost confidential portfolio review just to help bring a little bit of clarity and confidence to your investing life. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.